I think the PowerPoint is frozen. Psalm 130 was considered as a penitential psalm in the church, and it's usually used during the season of Lent. But at the same time, this psalm is, you can simply look at it as a prayer in distress. Yes, it is true that it has some elements of confession. It has elements of asking for forgiveness for both the psalmist himself and the community that he belongs to. But at the same time, this psalm is simply a prayer of somebody who's waiting for God to answer. Repeated twice in this psalm is, I'm waiting for you like a watchman waiting for the morning to come. I think this psalm gives us some insights into how we can pray when we feel like we are about to give up, when we feel like our prayers have not been answered, when we feel like, is there still really any point to continue to pray? The first thing that this psalm reminded us is that we should not forget to cry out to God when we feel like we are at the end of the rope. Verses 1 to 2. Out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. And in the Message translation, it reads like this. Help God! I've hit rock bottom. Master, hear my cry for help. Listen hard. Open your ears. Listen to my cries for mercy. The psalmist described himself as falling into the depths or hitting the rock bottom. I don't know if your life have ever come to a point of feeling like you are hitting the rock bottom. What do you do? How do you feel? What situation was the psalmist exactly in when he said he was in the depths? The psalmist may be facing some of, am I using this one, or there seems to be some echo with the mic? Do you want the wireless to take off? Do you want the wireless one? Oh no, no wireless. Sorry? Oh, okay. All right. Okay. The wireless was working in the Chinese congregation. So.
Well, I'm using their settings, so.
All right. Because there seems to be strong echo, that's why I wanted to ask. Okay. Cry out to God when you feel like you are at the end of the rope. Just like how the psalmist was feeling. He might be going through troubles, he might be in deep distress or illness, or maybe even facing enemy's attack. That was his death. And in ancient cosmology, people believed that God actually lived in heaven, literally. And heaven is way, way up there. Sometimes I think we felt the same way, that God is way, way up there. And then there's the earth that we are living in. And then this psalmist talk about he's actually in the rock bottom. He's in the pit. He's in the depths. And that's where he felt like he's being so isolated from God. He is not feeling that God is near to him. And that was precisely why he was crying out to God. And it was very inspiring to see how the psalmist actually pray. Think about how you normally pray, how I normally pray, or how the church normally prays. We usually come up with a list of what we call prayer requests, is it right? One by one by one, or maybe 10. We have a list of things that we really want to say to God and ask Him to fix it, right? But in this psalm, the psalmist was just praying a very simple prayer. What was it? What was he asking God for? Do you remember? In verse 1 and 2? He was only asking God to hear His voice. And I think this picture of this little boy crying is a perfect representation of how this psalmist was praying. I don't know if you have any of you has a small sibling or a child or maybe grandchild about toddler age, 2 or 3 years old, who got lost in the park or in a mall or in a toy store. And when children don't see their parents or caregivers, when they felt like, uh-oh, I'm lost, what do? They cry, right? The longer that they don't find their familiar people, the louder they cry, is that right? Why? Because crying is the way to get attention. Crying, the kid cry, hoping that the parents would hear the voice. And I think that's precisely what the psalmist was doing here. He said to God, hear my cry for help. Open your heart, open your ears, open, listen heart. Listen to my cries for mercy. Why is the psalmist not asking anything specific, but only for God to hear the voice, to hear His voice? Because I think in the psalmist's heart, he knows that as long as God hears His voice, everything is going to be okay. Just like a little child, as long as he or she knows that the parents hear the voice, they are going to be okay, they are safe. And the psalmist is not looking for an answer to his problem. Maybe that's something that he really wanted. But at this point of his life, the most important thing that he wanted assurance for is that God is actually nearby. That God actually knows that He's there. That God actually receives his prayer. I don't know how you feel if you send out a WhatsApp message or a text message or an email to a friend or to somebody and you have not seen the reply in a few days or maybe weeks or months. How do you feel? Well, in our days, we can always check if the recipients actually read the message, if we want, right? But in the old days, if you send a letter, you don't know. It could be lost in the mail. It could be sent to the wrong address. It could just be the receiver not acknowledging that they didn't even open the letter and throw it in the trash can. We don't know. We have no control over what the other side, the receiver side, do with the message that we send. Is that right? People can choose not to respond, even though we really wanted to. And I think that's how the psalmist felt. And he wanted to know and to make sure that, God, please let me know, have you received my SOS message? Do you know what's going on? Do you know that I'm in this depth and I'm trying to reach out to you? Please, please, please. Just let me know that you got my message. I don't need any other things because I know that as long as you hear my voice, I'm going to be okay. The second thing that the psalmist reminded us in this prayer is to trust in God's character. Yes, he mentioned about, oh Lord, if you keep a record of my sin or of sins, who can stand? But also, he mentioned about in verse 8, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love. And this is the word hesed, unfailing love. Sometimes we translate it as steadfastness, or mercy, or covenant faithfulness. I think that's the best translation. This love of God that we are talking about is not just a feeling. It is not based on the mood of how God feels that day. It is not even based on how we do, what kind of things that we do to please God. Sometimes as children, we are always afraid that we get punished by our parents, right? If we don't do something that they like or they approve, oh, maybe we're in trouble. And hesed is the word to assure us that this steadfast love, this covenant faithfulness, is not dependent upon circumstances or situation. And it is not affected by human failure, not even our sins. Yes, God will discipline his people if his people sin, but it does not mean that he does not love them anymore. Yes, sometimes God may seem to be silent. We have seen a lot of those stories in the Old Testament where it felt like God was silent. When the Israelites were walking through the wilderness for 40 years, God, are you kidding me? 40 years we need to walk in the wilderness and you're not doing anything to speed up our process? For 400 years, God had not spoken, being the New Testament and the Old Testament period. And in the Holocaust, where is God? Why do you make your people suffer? Do you still really love us? This is precisely what the psalmist wants to tell us when we are in that kind of situation, when we felt like God was silent, is to remember. The discipline of remembering, it is a very, very important spiritual practice. We have lots of different spiritual practices that we do. But the practice of remembering, the art of remembering, is what the Bible has taught us over and over and over again. And particularly in the book of Psalms, if you read them carefully, you will hear over and over and over again the psalmist recounting what the Lord has done for his people. Yes, there were times that we felt like God was away. He's so far. We are in the depths. We are in the rock bottoms. And are you really just up there not involving, participating in our lives? But the psalmist, together, they recount what God has done from the day of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's why it is very, very meaningful to call God the God of our fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because this is more than just a name. This is the story of God. This is telling us how God has been working and acting according to his character, which is steadfast love, and covenant faithfulness. And he's not going to abandon his people even in the most difficult time. And lastly, the psalmist reminds us that we need to keep waiting, keep trusting, and keep hoping. Because of God's steadfast love, because of who he is, we don't lose hope. We can wait, we can hope because of who God is. We can wait and hope regardless of our circumstances. In verses 5-6, it says twice, I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning. More than watchmen wait for the morning. In the Message translation, it says, I pray to God my life a prayer and wait for what he will say and do. My life is on the line before God, my Lord, waiting and watching until the morning. What does waiting mean? Waiting means expecting. Waiting means looking eagerly for God's presence. Waiting means enduring patience in the midst of trouble and difficulties. I don't know how many of you are biologists, or what do you call if you study insects? Okay, thank you for the word. I don't know if any of you have read maybe National Geographic or science magazines about spiders making their webs. Now, living in Vancouver, spider webs are our friends, right? And what do we usually do with them? If you see a spider web in your home, do you stand in front of it and gaze at it and appreciate its beauty? No. What do? You destroy it, right? And what happened after you destroy the spider web? It is there again the next day, usually, right? It seems like you can never get rid of spider webs. And if the spider is smart enough, they may move to another location to weave the web. But it doesn't mean that they will stop weaving the web, right? And I think that is such a good picture of waiting and hoping. When the spider's home is being repeatedly destroyed by us human beings, they just keep working on building their new homes. I don't think they ever give up. And scientists told us that, interestingly enough, spiders don't just weave their web to catch food. They actually weave their web for their own enjoyment as well. There is study about spiders making webs of beautiful patterns as their home, just like, you know, when you move to a new place, you put decoration, pictures, whatever up, right? Because a home is more than just a place you go and sleep. That is a place where you find comfort, you find enjoyment, a place where you feel like you can rest and relax. And spiders do the same. There's so much to learn from nature. There's so much to learn from even how a spider lives. When his dwelling is being repeatedly destroyed, it never loses hope. It just keeps working on it as they wait for a place where human beings cannot reach it. What about us when we are in the depths? Can we trust that God is going to rescue us? Can we trust that God is there even when we don't see him? Can we trust that God has received the message and will act according to his steadfast love? God and God alone is the source of our hope. In verse 5, the psalmist say, I wait for the Lord, and I put my hope in his word. Yesterday, I read a story about the Holocaust, where a Holocaust survivor was given a jacket of somebody who was being just executed in the concentration camp. And in the pocket of the jacket, he found something. It was a little piece of paper, written in Hebrew, of course. And it was the Shema, Deuteronomy 6. What is it? Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. What does it mean to live in a place like the concentration camp? What does it mean to hope? It is the word of the Lord that this person who was being just executed, putting in his pocket, that sustained him through these difficult times. To keep reminding himself that the Lord, my God, our God, is the one who loves and saves Israel. To remind himself that even in a situation like living in the concentration camp, that he should still love the Lord his God with all his heart, soul, and mind. I don't know how this person prays every day, but this is what he lives by every day, to keep trusting that God is his God, and that God is the Jewish people's God, and that God has never abandoned them, even when they don't see his presence. I know all of us know the story of the footprints. Have you heard of it? The story of the footprints, where somebody drew a picture, had a poem, two pairs of footprints on the beach, right? And he knows that it's God walking with him in his life. And then one day, all of a sudden, what happened? A set of footprints disappeared. And what did the person say? God, why did you leave me alone? And what did God say to him? He's carrying him, right? The footprint is actually God's footprint. Last week, I was listening to the sermon at our church. Our pastor was preaching on Psalm 77. And in the very last imagery of Psalm 77, she actually said to us, sometimes we might not even see a pair of footprints. Sometimes all that is left is nothing. We don't see our own footprints. We don't see God's footprints. It is just void and evil and nothing else. Everything seems to be so meaningless. And we seem to be so lost. But this prisoner in the Holocaust reminds us that even when he did not seem to see the footprints of God in his life, he still trusts that the one who created and called Israel to be his people is still the same yesterday, today, and forever. And therefore, he needs to remind himself that he needs to love him with all his heart, soul, and mind, even in a situation like that. And that is what the psalmist is encouraging us to do. And in the place of deep darkness, let us don't forget that if we look carefully, we can actually see God's footprints. Sometimes we cannot see it, but our friends, our brothers and sisters can, and they can show us where the footprints are. Besides the practice of remembering, I think there is another spiritual practice that is very important. It is the practice of looking. Looking at what? Oftentimes, our eyes focus on the negatives. I think that's just human nature. Usually, when something hit us, we think of the worst scenario rather than the best scenario. And if somebody is positive, we say that they are in denial, right? But I think there's a lot to learn to teach ourselves to reorient our perspectives. And that's actually what Psalms are doing. An Old Testament scholar, Walter Brueggemann, he wrote a book called The Psalms of Life and Faith. And he used a framework to look at the book of Psalms. He said the book of Psalms help us to move from disorientation to reorientation. It is the process of wrestling with our chaotic world, our own distress and deep darkness, and allowing God's word to reassure us, to allow the process of prayer for us to come before Him to express our distress. And at the end, we are reminded of God's goodness and mercy and become reoriented. Living in Vancouver, snow is not foreign to us. I remember last winter, went to tobogganing with my little girl. She's not little anymore, she's turning 12 this coming week. But I remember she was kind of shouting, saying, "Mom, come, look." And I didn't actually really pay attention to her at that point. And she was very angry with me. She's like, "Mom, how come you're not looking?" I said, "What? What am I supposed to see?" I was just freezing outside. You know, she was tobogganing and I'm just standing there to wait for her. And she said, "Mom, look at the snow. Every snowflake is different." Did you spend time looking at the snowflakes? Do you know the person who first discovered that every snowflake is different? He spent 50 years, he's a photographer. He spent 50 years, he lived in a very cold place. He spent 50 years looking at the snow, taking pictures of the snow without feeling tiring or bored. And he was delighted to look at the snow year after year. And that's what we miss in life. We fail to stop and look at the good and the beautiful. We focus our eyes too much on the bad and the evil. Yes, it's surrounding us. I'm not saying that we need to deny it. But finding that good and beautiful aspect of life is what helps us to hope. We have been praying for the war of Ukraine for a long time. Many people fled away, lost their homeland. I think I might have shared this story about a lady in our Bible study who has a friend who is a priest in the church in Ukraine. He took his young family, is a very young priest, he took his family and fled Ukraine. But then, after he found a place to settle his wife and young baby, he went back. And people said, "Are you crazy? You're going to be bombed. You might lose your life. You have your young family here." He said, "I cannot leave these people because I'm their priest, I'm their pastor." So he took a whole bunch of supplies back to Ukraine and then left again and back and forth making many trips. That's the good and beautiful we see in the midst of evil. Have you watched the film One Life? How many of you have watched that? No? See if you can find it. I got to watch it on my way back from New York 2 days ago. It was about an ordinary person who was born and raised during the time of the Holocaust. An Englishman who heard the news about children being trapped in Europe, living in unbelievable conditions. And he wanted to bring them back to England. What could he do as an ordinary person? He had to convince the government to issue visa for each and every one of the child that he's going to bring back to England. He has to find a sponsor. He has to find money for the visas. It was not cheap. It was £50 per child. And he had to find a foster family for every single child that he was bringing back. Despite of all the difficulties, he was decided that he wanted to do it. Yes, he could not save everybody, but he brought back 669 children from right before when Nazi German went into the country. He regretted his life. He regretted that he couldn't bring more kids, more children out. And then towards the end of his life, he was invited to a talk show, a TV show. And he did not realize that everybody who sat around him, have you seen that? Were the children whom he brought to England. You and I can become part of that good and beautiful to create a better world because we know God is our God. And that is a way that we can love our neighbors as ourselves. An ordinary person, he's not the president, he's not the prime minister, he's not rich, but an ordinary person doing an extraordinary act of love. What does Psalm 130 remind us? The world is a big mess. The world that we live in is not easy. It is not difficult. But as a rabbi reminded us in his two-minute talk about how we interpret the Holocaust, he said this: faith is not certainty. Faith is courage to live in uncertainty. Our world is full of uncertainty. Maybe our lives are full of uncertainties. You might be worried about many things, but do not forget to cry out to God. And you can have the assurance that he received your message. He receives your email. Because Jesus Christ has already bridged the gap between God and sinful human beings. We can be assured of his unfailing loyal love. And we can wait and hope with enduring patience. Like the spider weaving its web over and over again. And like the person who brought children back from Europe during the Holocaust, or the pastor who brings supplies back to Ukraine, let us be part of the good and beautiful story that you and I can write together by God's love. Let me invite the worship leaders to lead us sing the song of response.
Let us rise together and proclaim the hope we have in Jesus.
Great the chasm that lay between us. How high the mountain I